We are looking at the commandments that we find in Paul's gospel, focusing in on some of the direct, obvious, easy-to-see commandments. I want to start with John 14:5. If you love me, keep my commandments. If you want to show your love to Jesus, you need to keep his commandments. Now, if you've believed in Jesus, you have eternal life. If you have eternal life, you have a place in heaven with Jesus forever. End of story. But if you love Jesus and you want to show your love to Jesus, it's not the end of the story. You want to go on. If you want to have a place by Jesus' side for eternity, not just be in the general space where he dwells, but be close to him. If you want to be close to him then, you get ready now. You're close to him now. You show love to him now. And these commandments, I like to emphasize, these are gauges. These are things you can look at in yourself, not in others. This is not about judging others. This is about judging yourself. Looking at yourself and determining if you are what you ought to be. These are gauges. You can look at your own life and see, do I love Jesus the way that I should? Do I love Jesus as much as I should? I think it's safe to say that if you're here today, you love Jesus. But do you love him the way you ought to? Do you love him as much as you can? Or do you love him the way that Kinsley over there loves her mama? Do you have an infant's love, a child's love, or do you have a mature love? I will also say these are not things you can do on your own. These are not things that come to you naturally. When you look at these things and you say, oh, I'm not doing that. I need to be better at that. You need to take that to Jesus and say, help. I think of Peter, who looked to Jesus and walked to Jesus, but then he was distracted by the things around him, and he began to sink. And he didn't just say, oh, I need to tread water until I'm walking on the water again. He looked to Jesus, and he said, help. I'm focusing in this study on commandments, as I said, in the letters that Paul wrote. A more advanced study would include things that are a little bit more implicit. I'm focusing in just on direct commandments. There are commandments you can find in others' letters in the New Testament. There are commandments you can find from Jesus, some of which apply to the church, some of which I think apply to those who will live during the kingdom. Not to us. We'll be in heaven with Jesus at that time. There are commandments you can find in the words that God gave to Israel. I'm not commanded to offer sacrifices. Those commandments don't apply to me. But when Moses says, thou shalt not murder, I think that applies to me. So there is more, I think, to the commandments that Jesus has for us to follow than just what's in Paul's letters. But that's what I'm focusing on. Let's turn to Romans chapter 12. We're going to pick up there in verse 9. And I will say I made the mistake of doing my study in the King James rather than the New King James, which is what I like to speak out of. The King James is just what I'm used to and what I grew up with, so it's kind of force of habit. So I may use words differently than what are in the New King James here. So starting in verse 9, let love be without hypocrisy. I want to touch on this because that's not entirely clearly a commandment. If you look at that in the Greek, it almost is just unhypocritical love. There's no verbs there. There's no direction to do that. It's almost sort of a pause. So we'll take it as a commandment since that's what we see in the English. But love should be unhypocritical. Don't act loving. Henry, when he was, I think in college, maybe in high school, he was very much enjoyed the phrase, oh, bless your heart. That's hypocritical love. Let love be without hypocrisy. And then the last part of verse 9, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. I'm not going to say much about that, except that Paul doesn't go into what is evil. He does, however, over the next several verses, go very densely into what is good. So cling to what is good. Well, what is good? Let's look at the following verses. Verse 10, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. That phrase, kindly affection, has to do with the love shown to family, the love shown to your children, the love shown to your parents. You should have the same love for others that you have for your parents and your children. Do you do that? In honor, giving preference to one another. That word preference, it would almost be translated better, I think, as deference. Preference comes from the thought of it's going before. You're walking in front of someone. But you're walking in front of somebody sort of like an inferior might walk ahead of, maybe to clear the crowd out from before a superior who's behind you. So in showing preference to one another, think of that preference as I prefer what you want over what I want. There is a subtle notion of service there. We could almost rephrase that as serve one another. Do you do that? Or do you give preference to your own desires? When somebody says, I want to do something, do you say, no, I want to do something else? Verse 12, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation. And I think those go together. When there's a time of certain expectation of good things, you should rejoice in that. That almost seems easy, but it is tied together with being patient in tribulation. That word patient means to stay under. Many years ago, I think this was around 2002, I was in a terrible job, working for a terrible boss who was under the direction of possibly the worst boss I've ever had. Just a terrible human being. And I hated it. And I needed to be gone. It was bad. I remember my dad asked me at one point, Joel, why don't you just resign? You could find another job. I remember this so very clearly. It was on the front steps of the old church building. I said, Dad, I can't. The Lord won't let me leave. And the thought I had at that time was just stay under, stay under, stay under, stay under, stay under. And that's what that word tribulation means, stay under. I'm sorry, not tribulation, that's what the word patience means, stay under. When there is a tribulation that God has put on you, stay under that tribulation. Don't run out from under it as fast as you can. Don't seek a means of escape from it. When tribulation comes into your life, are you patient? Do you stay under it? Or do you try to get out from under it? Now, that whole time, I was having those problems. It was like, Lord, get me out of this. Lord, get me out of this. Lord, get me out of this. He will put a tribulation on you, and He will take it away. If you flee from that tribulation, you're not doing what the Word says. I think I skipped over verse 11. Not lagging in diligence. I like the King James Version. Not slothful in business. That's just somehow how much more direct. When there's something you need to do, get it done. I am not good at that. Just ask Lorraine. But when there's something that needs to be done, do you do it? Or are you slothful? I'll confess, I'm slothful. Fervent in spirit. That word fervent, I like that word. It's almost feverish. It has to do with heat, like boiling water. If you can picture, here's a cup of water, and here's a boiling pot of water. One of those is really active and doing stuff and seems to be getting stuff done. This would not have been a concept in the Roman times, of course, but you think of a steam engine. That boiling water gets stuff done. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. And again, I think those go together. Don't be slothful when there's something that needs to be done. Be like that boiling pot of water in serving the Lord. And I'm going to skip over verse 12, talk about that. Verse 13, and again, verse 13, these two go together. Distributing to the needs of the saints. And I don't think that needs a whole lot of commentary. When there are people around you who have a need, do you take from what you have, maybe from what little you have, and do you give it to them? There have been studies done, and they have found that people who don't have very much tend to give more to those in need than people who have a lot. Because people who don't have very much understand what it's like to not have very much. And they have a greater tendency to give. Do you give to those in the assembly, those who are part of the house of God, do you give to them when they are in need? And then given to hospitality. That word hospitality in the Greek has to do with loving the stranger. It's a philo, which I think you might know that word, that Greek word, philo, and xeno. If you know the word xenophobia, fear of the foreign, giving to those who are strangers. So give to those who are in God's household, but also show love to those who are outside of God's household. Show love to those that you don't know. I was thinking this morning, it becomes harder for me as I get older to show love to people that I don't know because I tend to meet people and get to know them and they're not strangers anymore. When we first moved into our neighborhood, everybody was a stranger. And now the only strangers are people who have moved in recently. So I would emphasize this for some of you younger people who haven't gotten to know everybody that you come into contact with. Those of you who don't walk into a restaurant and know two different people who are sitting there. Show love to those that you don't know. That's what that word hospitality means. Is that something you do? Or do you go about your day and all those strangers that I come into contact with, they have nothing to do with me and I want nothing to do with them. Do you show love to strangers? Verse 14. Bless those who persecute you. This one is a very difficult commandment. And I know that because Paul spells it out again. Bless and do not curse. Your natural tendency, if somebody cuts you off on the highway, is to say rude things about them. Maybe not terrible rude. But should you do that? I like to say, you put me in a car for 5 minutes with anybody who's driving in rush hour traffic, and I will tell you whether or not that person loves Jesus. 5 minutes. Try that for an experiment. Drive down the road in rush hour traffic for 5 minutes and make it clear to the hosts of heaven who are watching you that you love Jesus. Paul doesn't tell us to do these things because they are easy. Paul tells us to do these things because that person who just cut me off really is an idiot and needs to know about it, and if I could yell it louder, I would. When someone does something bad to you, do you bless them? Every single time? And I'll say that. If you're not doing these every single time the opportunity arises, you're not doing these. This is kind of gross and kind of rude, but, you know, I've got this lovely meal for you. How much dog poop is it acceptable for me to put in that lovely meal I'm giving to you? In scriptural terms, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. They didn't know this back then, but leavening agents that they would have had at that time would have been a lie. You put a little yeast in a little bit of bread, and those little yeasty beasties spread all throughout the bread. If you're not doing these every time the opportunity arises, you're not doing them. God doesn't call on us to be imperfect. He calls on us to be perfect, to be complete, to be whole and entire. Verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice. I did something mean to, well, Emily McIntyre doesn't seem to be here. I did something mean to Emily McIntyre once upon a time. She was in middle school, and she was very excited. I got all A's. And not really without thinking, I just said, oh, Emily, I guess that means they're not challenging you very much, are they? Because, you know, it was just really easy for her. She was maxing out the top of the scale in every class. And they weren't. They weren't challenging her. That was one of my complaints about the school district we were in. It's like, you know, bright kids were not challenged. Emily didn't know what to think about that. I was not rejoicing with Emily as she rejoiced in her great grade card that I'm sure her parents had said, oh, that's so good, Emily. Rejoice with those who rejoice. When somebody's happy, don't be sarcastic. Don't say, well, you know, this too shall pass. Don't get too happy. When someone is rejoicing, rejoice with them. When someone is an infant in Christ and is rejoicing over the kinds of things that spiritual infants rejoice over, don't teach them, don't correct them, don't explain to them how they ought to be thinking about the situation. Rejoice with them. And the flip side of that, weep with those who weep. You know, an accusation is sometimes hurled against Christians. And this has happened often enough that people complain about this on the internet. A Christian goes to a funeral of an acquaintance, maybe somebody they want to witness to, maybe a good friend, I don't know. Well, you know, this was God's plan. The death of your loved one was part of God's plan. God had a purpose in this. And I have heard Christians at funerals say that. There was a young man passed not too long ago that the son of some dear friends. And they were mourning, but they knew God had a purpose. And I was glad to be able to share in that knowledge with them. God has purpose. But that's not a comforting thought. That's not a way to share the mourning of those who have experienced loss if they don't know Jesus. When someone is mourning, don't tell them, well, it'll be okay. Again, I'm going to call out my wife. She will tell you, I am a terrible comforter. I am a miserable comforter. It'll be okay. Sometimes that's comforting, sometimes that's not. Sometimes somebody just wants you to cry with them. This is a hard one. We are not always comfortable with grief. It's our natural tendency to want someone to stop grieving and be happy. And that's a very natural tendency. If someone is in pain, we want to get them out of that pain. If someone is having a problem, we want to get them out of that problem. We want to help them. And that's not bad. But when someone is in sorrow, share that sorrow with them. Bear that burden with them. Suffer with them. That's hard. Do you do that? Verse 16. And here I think we kind of get out of that little parenthetical that began with verse 9. Verse 16, be of the same mind toward one another. There's a word we see sometimes, I don't think it's this way in the King James, but we see it elsewhere in the King James sometimes, be like-minded, kind of just have a similar mindset. Think about each other in a similar way. Don't be contrary. Don't be argumentative. Be of the same mind. My boss got me a mug. I felt so understood. There was a bit of debate about who in my family got me this mug because it was clearly from someone who understood me and understood my style of communication. And that mug said, I'm not arguing with you, I'm explaining why I'm right. In a professional setting, sometimes I need to do that. I struggle with that. I want you to understand the things I understand. I just want to help you because, you know, I'm right and I know I'm right and I want you to be right too. Mourn with those who mourn. Be like-minded. Don't be contrary. Don't be argumentative. Don't be always trying to help people understand why you're actually correct. Do you do that? Can you look at your conversation throughout the past week and say, yeah, I've pretty much got a handle on that. It's so great. Verse 16, continuing, do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. There are a lot of Christians. I'm going to get a little bit political here. I'm going to say the broad swath of evangelical Christianity has decided over the last 45, 50 years that they need to be involved in the very important, high-minded things in this country. They need to govern. They want to have a king like all the nations round about them. You know, if you want to solve the problems in this country, begin by making sure that you have done everything you can for the people you come in contact with. Also, finish by making sure you've done everything you can for the people you come into contact with. We do not need to involve ourselves in the affairs of a nation that we are not a part of. My citizenship is in heaven. My political leader is my king, Jesus, and he rules in my heart. I would like for him to rule in the hearts of others, and that is entirely something people do of their own choice. If we somehow manage to get every person in this country to adhere to every commandment we find in Paul's gospel, do you know what eternal good that would do for them if they didn't accept Jesus? Nothing. If you don't believe in Jesus, it doesn't matter what men with guns force you to do. And that's what I think of when I think of government. Government is a whole bunch of men who are in charge of men with guns who will put you in a cage if you don't do the right thing. We might get into that here in a few verses. We might not. Down in verse 13. I'm sorry, down in chapter 13. We should not be concerning ourselves with all these high-minded things. We should be willing to go down to the lowest of the low, those around us who are not important people. And again, I apologize. I made the mistake of studying the King James, so all my vocabulary in my head is the King James. But the King James says, you know, condescend to men of low estate. And that word condescend means to go down with. We don't really like that word in this language. We don't like to be condescended to these days. We don't want to think that somebody is up here, but they're coming down to our level because they're just so kind to us. But Paul says it's a good thing. Be willing to be at the same level as the lowly. Don't try to be up here with all the high-minded people. Help the lowly. In the verse 16, finishing that out, do not be wise in your own opinion. I have opinions. I think everybody has opinions. I'd be happy to share mine with you. Be worth every penny you paid for it. We want to be humble in presenting our opinions. And maybe even better than that, we want to be wise in presenting the opinions of God. What does God say? What can we find in His Word? What has He shown to us? You know, those are good things to be wise in. Be wise in the opinions of God. Repay no one for evil. And this is something that, again, he spends three verses on this. Repay no one evil for evil. If someone does something bad to you, don't do something bad to them. Verse 17, have regard for good things in the sight of all men. And again, I think verses 17, 18, and 19 all kind of go together. Paul starts with a simple statement, repay no one evil for evil, and everything else kind of expands on that. That notion to have regard for good things in the sight of all men, that phrase, have regard, It has to do with making preparation, something you do in advance. You know, if you're going to go on a camping trip, you prepare the things you need for that camping trip in advance. I think Brother Dan McIntyre once shared the opinion that, you know, a well-prepared man should be able to drop in the middle of a forest and within a year should be able to provide for himself and his family just from the things he finds out there in the wilderness. And, you know, that's a very interesting notion. It's a very attractive notion. But I would much rather prepare for my camping trip in the wilderness. So what do we prepare? Prepare good things. And that phrase, good things, it just means things that are good. Sometimes it means beautiful. Sometimes it means wholesome. I think the emphasis here, though, we want to be seen making preparation to do good in the sight of anyone who's looking. If we find ourselves doing things in secret because we don't want people to see what we're doing, we're not preparing for good in the sight of all men. Everything you do should be open. I used to tell my kids, if you don't want people to know you did something, then you shouldn't do it. Verse 18, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, and I'm going to comment on the Greek here, as much as depends on you is a two-letter word in the Greek. That's a lot to put on one word, but it's accurate. To the extent that it depends on you, you might say as much as it's of you. Of is a two-letter word in the English. If it's of you, if it's possible, live peaceably with all men. If someone that you know and regularly come into contact with decides they don't like you and they cause trouble, there's not a lot you can do about that. You can't control what other people do. I think this comes into play really in two places. Well, three maybe. Family, place you live, your neighbors, the workplace. If somebody takes a disliking to you and decides to cause problems, don't repay evil for evil. Be seen preparing good things. Let everyone see that you are preparing good things. Don't repay evil for evil. To the extent that it's possible, as much as is in you, live peaceably. Sometimes it's not possible. Dad has told a story of a bad neighbor we lived next to once upon a time. And that bad neighbor offered to fight Dad. And Dad made it clear that he was prepared to fight. And the neighbor decided he didn't want to fight after all. If somebody throws a punch at you, and you block that punch, and you kind of go to shove them off of you so they can't hit you, and you hit their nose and you bloody their nose, I don't think this applies. This isn't say you need to be at peace with all people at all times and it's your fault if somebody else causes problems. Now, if you walk up to somebody and bloody the nose, that's a different story. But people are going to cause trouble for you. You want to avoid that trouble where you can. As much as it's possible, as much as it depends on you, promote peace. Don't repay evil for evil, but approach them with peace. Anytime something goes wrong, be certain. Make preparation. Make it clear to anybody who's watching it's not your doing. And then verse 19, he goes even deeper. Do not avenge yourselves. If somebody does you wrong, don't do wrong to them. If somebody causes you problems in the workplace, do everything you can to help them. Make it clear to everybody in the workplace that, hey, they're causing problems, but you are doing good. Give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I'll repay. So when you give place to wrath, what is the place for that wrath? That place is with God. God, this person is causing me problems. Paul says elsewhere in his writings about someone, the Lord reward them according to their works. And Paul makes it clear their works were not good. He talks at one point about delivering such an one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. That's not something you can do except through prayer to your Father. If there's a need for wrath, give place to it. Give God that responsibility. God, I have a problem. There needs to be some wrath manifested here. Maybe there doesn't need to be. Maybe you could go to God and say, I feel like there needs to be wrath here. And maybe you need some correction. But the place for that wrath is God. Verse 21, do not be overcome by evil. Overcome evil with good. When you are presented with evil, when people do bad things to you, do you on any level try to do bad things back? On any level, at any time. Overcome evil with good. Take those problems to God. I'm going to get into verse 1 of chapter 13. And I'm going to jump down to verse 6. There's really only two commandments there. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. I am a natural anarchist. No one can tell me what to do. All taxation is theft. The best government is no government. In me, that is in myself, there dwells no good thing. Be subject to the governing authorities. If there's a law, do you obey it? If there's a long straightaway, and you can see there's no speed traps, and there's maybe one car behind you, do you exceed the speed limit by 20 miles an hour? Because you're harming no one. The highway's designed for that. The car was designed for that. It's not a problem. You can do 90 miles an hour safely here, even though the posted speed limit is 70. Do you do that? I used to commute to Bentonville, Arkansas, every other week. I'd drive up here for a weekend, drive back down there and work. It was about a four-hour drive. I made it in 3 hours once upon a time. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. If there's a law on the books, and you can't find something in the Word of God that says directly, you must obey this. If somebody tells me the law is you have to kill your neighbor, I'm not going to commit murder. But if there's a law, you need to obey it, do you? Verse 6, because of this you also pay taxes. I'm sorry, verse 7. Render therefore to all their dues. Taxes to whom taxes are due. There is a branch of Christianity that says you shouldn't pay taxes to the government because the government does evil things with it. Not what the Bible says. Customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. And that last one, honor the king. Show respect to the people who are in charge. I don't always feel like doing it. But show that respect to those who have authority. Pay what they're owed. Now, if the law says, hey, you can deduct this on your taxes, I don't have a problem with that. The law says you can do it, you don't owe it. It's not saying, hey, give the government everything you can. But if you legitimately owe something, you need to pay it. You need to not avoid it. Now, the system in place today is such that if you don't pay your taxes, you're going to find out about it. They're going to tell you you didn't pay your taxes, and then they're going to come take it. But we need to do that for conscience' sake, not just because we know they're going to take it away. So obey the government. Show honor to those in power. Follow the law. Do you do that? And we'll stop there.